from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports is the score. Always live on the free Odyssey app. WSCR Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Sports Station.
The score!
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
And the pitch to Arenado. Fly ball, shallow center. Horner going out and calling. Nico's there. And it falls in for a base hit. Crow Armstrong came in. There was confusion between Horner and Crow Armstrong. And the ball game is tied 4-4. Nico with two hits today. Hits a fly ball to center. Newt Barr is going to make the catch, and the ball game is over. The Cubs let one slip away today. The Cardinals, with 3 in the 8th inning and 1 in the 9th, beat the Cubs by a score of 5-4.
Curveball, that one is hit a long way to right. Kepler has given the Twins the lead once again. A solo shot here at the bottom of the 7th. And it's now 3-2. Gavin Sheets, last chance. Popped up left side of the infield. And Lee is there. Once again, it was the 8th inning, getting away from the White Sox. And they fall tonight in game 2 of this series, 6-2, as the losing streak has ballooned to 19 in a row.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
I'm not going to lie, folks. It's grim. It's grim. One of the wonderful things, theoretically, about baseball is that hope springs eternal. That there's always positivity. Well, at least there's low brass. Crank it. If the low brass sounds a little more morose today, that's the sound of both 19 consecutive losses and a 3-run lead collapsing in the 8th inning as defeat was snatched from the jaws of victory. Yes, Boog, I agreed with that one when you said it yesterday. It's, oh, man. I mean, because there were starting to feel like some positive vibes. I'm wearing the shirt. I can't even pretend the good vibes t-shirt is getting the job done today. It's just not. It's freaking miserable.
I appreciate the effort by you, though.
Good morning, everyone. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. And, 19 in a row for the White Sox, and the Cubs lose like that. Still, on we soldier and talk some baseball. We want to hear from you. Let's throw open the phone lines immediately. There we go. 312-644-6767. We're short today. I mean, it's a 3-hour show, but it's been 3 hours and 40 minutes for a few weeks, so it's short by comparison. And we have a couple of guests later on, so we'll give you the opportunity to call and talk right now. Derek Gould's going to come on from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Terrific Cardinals beat writer and thoughtful guy, radio guy as well. Good talker. And then friend of the show, Eno Saris from The Athletic, will be on in the final hour. He's terrific. We'll talk to him about what a disaster this White Sox thing is. And we'll talk about all the prospects that were moved at the trade deadline. Get a little post-trade deadline wrap-up. But your phone calls and your texts, not merely welcome, but elemental to the very completion of the broadcast. You can reach us on the BetQL listener line. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Tonight, the Cubs and Cardinals finish their series at Wrigley Field. Score has the only local broadcast of the game. Pregame coverage starts at 5:35 with first pitch at 6:10 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. All right, let me ask you this. What is your favorite your favorite nugget about the White Sox losing this. And the associate producer is indeed in today. He's at work today. So if you call and you reach him, well, good for you. If you reach Sean Sears, you've got that going for you as well. But they are both here and available to screen your calls. What is your favorite White Sox nugget about the ugliness? Is it this one, that Dylan Cease has 4 wins in July and that the White Sox had 3 wins in July? That's one. Or is it this one from my friend Steve Greenberg over at the Sun-Times? If you remove the 14-game losing streak earlier in the year, the 19-game losing streak they're currently in, and the 3-22 start to the season, if you remove all 3 of those stretches from the win-loss columns in the standings, the White Sox are still under 500. They're still 3 games under 500, even with all of that. That's freaking staggering, man. This is one of the worst and ugliest seasons of all time in baseball history. And it is the ugliest and worst season that I've seen in 32 now baseball seasons in Chicago. I guess 31 just feels like 32. You know what I mean? That's how long it feels. But I don't even know. I don't even know if it's possible to be angry if you're a White Sox fan, right? I mean, you must have transitioned to something beyond that. You've got to have transitioned beyond anger. I mean, what are you supposed to do? And I don't think it's funny. It's a failure at every possible level. Every possible level of the org. And there's news today this morning, and we'll get to the Cubs' sad loss in a moment, but there's news today this morning, as there always is on a Sunday, from Bob Nightingale over at USA Today. And it's interesting because reports have been circulating that Pedro Grifol might be fired on Thursday and then maybe Friday, would not last the weekend. And then here apparently is what happened. After the 17th consecutive loss on Wednesday, Jerry Reinsdorf, Chris Getz, and manager Pedro Grifol had a private meeting to address a myriad of issues with their woeful team, including Grifol's future. So this, according to Bob Nightingale, they ultimately decided not to fire him before the weekend series against the Minnesota Twins. While Grifol could still be fired any day, or even last until the end of the year if they suddenly start sprinkling in a few victories, the White Sox have no plans to look for a permanent replacement until after the season. Miami Marlins manager Skip Schumacher is expected to leave the Marlins after the season, remains the leading candidate for the job. Yet he's also a hot candidate for several other teams who will be looking for new managers this winter. So that from Bob Nightingale. Skip Schumacher, a former Cardinal, a favorite of Tony La Russa, who is indeed the shadow team president of this organization. I mean, I don't even know if it's shadow at this point, but you know, it's you've got Tony and you've got Chris Getz and you've got Jerry Reinsdorf and you've got Pedro Grifol. And the manager is a small piece of the debacle. He's a piece of it, that's for sure. Embarrassing week for Pedro. I mean, you had the report from 670 The Score about what had gone on after the All-Star game. And, you know, on the first day of the second half. And, of course, Pedro refuted that. But if you listen to his his denial, he actually admitted everything that's in there. Just kind of he dismissed the context. And then I know Gavin Sheets defended Pedro and said the report was taken out of context. But I, for one, stand by that report. I'm sure we will talk about it more on Parkins and Spiegel tomorrow. It is not the story of the Sox season, even remotely, no matter what the play-by-play voice has decided to say and fight back in some odd little addition to his odd season. It's really inconsequential, frankly. The report is what it is because it was confirmed by people inside that clubhouse. But not everybody has the same take on it. Anyway, that was just a piece of Pedro's embarrassing week. How about Steven Wilson just like marching off the mound and not even being there for Pedro to hand the ball off to when he was taken out on Friday. And then Pedro trying to downplay that, oddly, on Friday night, instead of just being honest and talking about how ugly that was. I mean, there's just so much. And it's just small-time stuff. It's small potatoes. It's so much bigger than the manager. It is. Who seems like a decent guy. Overwhelmed. It's a bad mix. It's a bad match. It's just... So whether he gets fired now or gets fired at the end of the year, I don't think it really matters. This thing is a debacle of the highest order at every level of the organization. Before the show even began, the text I got was this one. Matt, I enjoy your show on Sunday morning. As a White Sox fan, it's been the worst season ever. A look at the box score from last night shows the ineptitude of the team. Why don't they play the guy they traded for with the broken leg? He can't be any worse. That's Alexander Albertus, one of the Dodgers trio that they got from the Fetty deal and the Kopech deal. By the way, Kopech with another perfect inning last night. Dodgers seemingly figuring some stuff out. I don't know if that'll last. I've got my Kopech concerns overall. But goodness. It is just so incredibly ugly. And we'll talk to you about it. And we'll talk to Eno Saris about it at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. All right, let's switch sides of ugliness. Texter says, cheer up, Matt. This show is the highlight of my weekend. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Brian. All right, I will cheer up. I've got some fun stuff to do later on. I've got Team of the Moment. We're gonna talk about Eric Davis from the 1987 Cincinnati Reds, and it's going to make sense later on in the show. Believe me. Okay? We've got a lot of stuff that we're going to enjoy today. But now to something else we won't enjoy. The dissection of the play you heard in the open when Nico Hoerner went back to field a pop-up that would have ended the eighth inning at a 4-2 Cubs lead. Porter Hodge, excited he got the pop-up, pumped his fist. I think he might have punched the glove. But we know that sky has been an issue and was an issue yesterday. You know what we know? Dansby Swanson kind of very aggressively waving everyone off of a pop-up earlier. And then Nico Hoerner getting under a pop-up, I want to say it was the sixth inning, and waving everyone off, taking it, and then laughing and kind of smiling and nodding to Pete Crow Armstrong and to Dansby like, yeah, that sky is messed up, right? I know. I got it. We got it. And then that led to the play that you heard in the open where the pop-up drops and two runs score. An absolute debacle. And I want to help you with this. Baseball is weird, and that's the tough spot on the field. And here's how you know it's a tough spot on the field, because there were differing views to what I think is not a binary A and B discussion as to whose fault that play was. Here's Cliff Floyd after the game.
He puts his arms out right there. It's not with authority, right? And Pete says, is like, I have everything in the outfield when it touches that grass. Everything. That's how good he is. Now, until he misses it, until he has some trouble getting to those balls, which he probably won't for 10 years, you have to allow him to catch that baseball. And if he doesn't, okay, cool.
All right, so you didn't hear the name Nico in there, but at the beginning, that's who he's talking about. Cliff Floyd put that on Nico Hoerner and said that Nico didn't wave it off with enough authority. And so when PCA doesn't see him wave it off and PCA decides to come in and get it, and then he paused and slowed up. Cliff was passionate about it in postgame. It was really interesting because the immediate takeaway from watching it was that that's on PCA for calling off Nico Hoerner. And then it's on a ball that he's sliding on to try and make a catch. And that's what Craig Counsell said after the game.
Well, you know, a couple of things. We had, you know, a walk and the hit by pitch hurt us. And then, you know, frankly, we had a play to get out of the inning. And, you know, I think Pete just got a little over aggressive. It's you know, right to call him off, but not if, you know, we're making a sliding play. And I think, you know, it's a learning experience for Pete. But unfortunately, it contributed to a big play in the game that, ultimately cost us two runs.
So, I mean, it's a brutal play, and it's a brutal moment, and it's an angering Cubs loss. And it's a kid in Pete Crow Armstrong who's been terrific on defense, and lately has been really good at the plate. And you'll hear from Dustin Kelly in about an hour, the Cubs pitching coach, about a variety of things, including Pete Crow Armstrong at the plate. But that's a bad moment. It's also a bad moment for Nico Hoerner. And Nico is terrific, is just a really good all-around ball player. So thoughtful, so smart, such good instincts. And so good defensively, Gold Glover with reason. Actually, we do have Nico talking about that play after the game, and this is Nico talking about Pete and acknowledging how good Pete is while talking about the oddness of the play.
It's the play we've all practiced, you know, our whole lives as far as the rules of it. We're an infielder. You go until you hear something, and you know, we did that today, and the ball dropped. Unfortunately, I feel like, you know, we do that play 100 times. We catch it 99 times. You know, I feel like the biggest takeaway from my end, and if there's anything I can emphasize, is just that play is all about trust. And I trust Pete as much as anyone I've ever played with. He's one of the best defenders if not the best defender I've ever been around. And, you know, he's going to win us countless games this year and for years to come. He's been playing great all-around baseball and impacting the game every single day. And, you know, that one dropped. But, you know, if we do that, got that same ball again tomorrow, and he calls it, I'm going to trust him 100%.
So, look, great classy stuff from Nico, of course. I understand where Cliff Floyd is coming from, because Cliff Floyd was an outfielder, and then eventually he was a first baseman. But Cliff Floyd was an outfielder. And as an outfielder, and if a kid is great in center, he's got to know that he can go get that ball and that's his. But here's the thing. If Pete's going to call that off, if he's going to say anything, then he's got to catch it. He's got to make sure. He can't hold up, even if he's worried about Nico's body position. He's got to go flying in there. And he pulls up a little bit, does Pete, because he's a little worried about Nico. I think Pete was trying to do Nico a solid because of the smile that I mentioned earlier, because of the acknowledgement from the infielders there to the center fielder that it's a tough sky. That's an easier ball for the center fielder if it's just a little bit deeper, but it was a little bit further in. And also, if you look, Nico did not wave off as frantically, as vehemently as Dansby did. He's not quite as vehement when he does it. It's just a funky baseball play, and it happened at an awful time. It is not a binary A and B. That's 100% on Pete, or that's 100% on Nico. I think it's like 80% on Pete, you know? But it's a little bit on Nico. It's just a funky play. I'm glad that Cliff said what he did, because it expresses the nuance of the thing. And while I disagree, I think it's important to understand that every once in a while you get a ball in that weird part of the field, man. That weird part of the field. And, you know, it's an interesting thing, because I still remember Nico going back on a ball in Cincinnati, and Ian Happ, when he was playing center, coming up on a ball and them colliding with a violent, violent collision. And so those are stressful spots on a baseball field. And sometimes those plays can happen.
Horner got hurt in San Diego last year on a play like that.
On a play like that, right? So Nico's got a little bit of hesitancy about that play. And, you know, understandably so. Pete's got to go harder or not at all. So ultimately, it does end up on Pete. But I do understand the difficulty in the play, and I hope they discuss it and decide that, if you're going to call it, you got to get it. And as the texter rightly points out, the Isak Paredes horrific throw was a massive part of that play. A massive part of that play. And a massive part of that inning. And he can't make that throw. He is better defensively than Christopher Morel. But that was an error in judgment, maybe from a guy who's trying to prove his viability, prove his utility in the new spot. I don't know. But that was a brutal decision to make that throw, and then the throw was so high and so crazy, immediately put two in scoring position with two outs, and then any little thing causes those two runs. Texter says it's 100% on PCA. Be honest. I am being honest. It's not 100% on PCA. I just told you what I think it is. Just told you it's like 80-20. Maybe 75-25, if I'm being generous, but probably 80-20. And they'll talk about it. But anyway, it's just a baseball play. And what it is a terrible collapse of a loss that really makes you feel awful once again. after perhaps you had enjoyed watching an offense that has clearly come alive with Paredes and a healthy Bellinger there in that lineup. The offense has clearly found a groove and a comfort level, and I so hoped we were going to be talking about that this morning. But instead, we're talking about a team that has reclaimed last place at 9.5 games back, a team that is now 6 games back in the wild card with only the Nationals, Marlins, and Rockies behind them. They're behind the Cincinnati Reds, who have openly given up on the season. And then there are the Cubs, who have not quite fully openly given up, even if the general manager basically did. All right, phone lines are open. Let's talk to you at 312-644-6767. Team of the moment coming up later on. I did mention we'll talk about Eric Davis, and I'll tell you why later, but later on. Derek Gould from the St. Louis Dispatch at 940. Eno Saris at 11. Your phone calls and texts all morning long on Hit and Run. On what we will try to make a festive and somewhat upbeat morning with the terrible state of baseball still remaining in the back or maybe even the front of our minds. It is The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Gavin Sheets, last chance. Popped up left side of the infield. And Lee is there. Once again, it was the eighth inning, getting away from the White Sox. And they fall tonight in game two of this series, 6-2, as the losing streak has ballooned to 19 in a row.
Yeah, this one was tough and tight for a long time, but unfortunately the eighth inning came around once again, and it's been a nightmarish eighth. Tonight, no exception.
19 in a row for the White Sox. Just grim. The modern record is 23 straight by the 1961 Phillies. They could do it. Last team to get to 20 was the Orioles when they started the year 0-21. That is, that was the Orioles. And then, the Orioles dropped 19 straight in 2021. And the White Sox could become the seventh team in the history of baseball since 1901 to have a streak reach 20 when they face the Twins later on today. 670 The Score is where you are. It's Matt Spiegel, who you are with. The text line is buzzing. Texter says, Pedro Grifol is more than just a piece of the White Sox descent to the dregs. Everybody on that bench does their job better than him. He has no strengths as a manager. They were a 100-loss team last year, historically worse this year. There's nothing to point to that merits retaining him. This ain't just a piece. I agree with that. I agree that he has no strengths as a manager. I'm not exactly sure if there's anything. Oh, God. And then, my God, so much anger at the Cubs. Speaks, does 3 out of 4 from the Cardinals do anything for you? I'm really struggling. I wanted to be excited. But yesterday killed it again. Yeah, yesterday was really damaging to any kind of hope that you might have pulled. And I thought, I don't know whether it was Brett Taylor or Michael Cirami over at Bleacher Nation wrote it right about, like, the deadline wasn't really a full sell-off, you know? It gave you the indication that they kind of still thought that they could still maybe make an incredible miracle run. And when we were there, Parker and Spiegel, last week, remember I asked Craig Counsell about it? He's like, yeah, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. We're still going. And all the players are like, nothing has changed. And that's the way they have to feel. So it's like, okay. I mean, and I was during the week, it was like, hey, man, things have happened. Crazy things have happened in baseball. They're not that far off the pace. And then they start to hit well. And Nico's like, this is the best version of ourselves. And you find yourself starting to buy in just a little bit. And then that thing yesterday really killed off some of those vibes. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to you at 670 The Score. Good morning. It's Bob in Arlington Heights, first off. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good morning, Matt. Good to talk to you again. And, you know, I'm probably just rehashing everything you said, but you know, you're more forgiving of PCA than I am on that play. But, you know, it all starts with Paredes not putting the ball in his pocket. And as I said to Sean, you know, even Christopher Morel, I think, would have thought better than making that throw.
Yeah, he might have. And Patrick Wisdom might have thought better. And Nick Madrigal certainly would have thought better because he probably knows the reality of his arm. Yeah, it's a terrible decision. It's an absolutely terrible decision. But look, Porter Hodge can't be walking people and then hitting a batter as well. I mean, it's a whole group situation, a whole combo platter of suck there in that eighth inning. This is Brett in North Aurora on 670 The Score. What's up, Brett?
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm all right.
Same here. Yesterday was a whole bunch of suck by the Cubs, especially late. And it's been if there's anything this year that's been consistent from the first game of the season, it's the last later innings in the bullpen performance. And when Jed was on on your show earlier this week, he basically was, you know, content. Well, this is who we are. This is what we are. That was being intellectually dishonest. They have 21 blown saves. You cut that down in a third to 14. They're a game and a half or two games out of first place. They're in wild card position. That, to me, is the biggest thing. And the easiest thing to fix on a team is to go get arms in the bullpen.
I don't think it's the easiest thing to fix because it's not just about arms. You need a lot of arms because they get injured and they fade, they wax, and they wane from year to year. But what's maddening about this one is everybody knew it was a weakness and a problem in the offseason, and they didn't do anything to really fully address closer. And what if they had? I mean, if this is really a year where you were going for it, then 5-6 weeks ago, they should have got themselves a closer and should have got themselves another bat. And I think you can see from the addition of Paredes, a different kind of profile than Morel. It makes a difference to have multiple dudes, and you'll hear Dustin Kelly address this at the top of the hour, multiple dudes who have a two-strike approach in that lineup. It can change things. But it also could have changed things to have a slugger, a bona fide slugger in there could have changed things. They didn't do anything for the bat, and they didn't do anything for the bullpen, and the whole team knew that they didn't have enough, and it's been a very, very tough year for Jed. Very tough year for his overall team-building philosophies, and then in my mind, for the plan during the year. And this is regardless of whether I thought they should make a trade at different times along the way, and you talk every day about it. I mean, it's like...
Your guy, J.D. Martinez, had a grand slam last night.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, he did. But like you look at this thing now, and you look at what it's been. It's like they did not get aggressive early, and you wonder how things might have been different because that bullpen is rough. This is Michael in Lakeview on The Score as we talk Cubs and Sox on Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. What's up, Michael?
Happy Lala Sunday, Speed.
Oh, yes.
You picking the 12-year-old today, so I don't have to watch White Sox baseball. So that's a consolation prize. But you asked for a nugget, and I'm on a text thread with a bunch of friends and all White Sox fans. And one of them asked, and I think this is the question that it made me think: who is going to have more wins in September, the Bears or the White Sox? And I had to think about it for a second because that's how bad they are. And you start looking at it and. As you talk about the Sox, and you know, as a former season ticket holder, lifelong fan, typically I would say I have some hope, you know, that maybe the minor leagues are going to bring some talent forward. But when you look at the situation we're in right now, or they're in right now, we have a GM who is responsible for player development, who is I think no matter what metric you look at, isn't very good at his job. He was completely ran over during the trade deadline, and I could argue that he was probably taken advantage of in the Cease trade as well. You have an owner who doesn't want to pay any money, because if you're going to try to rebuild this team, you're going to have to spend and bring in some bats because the minor league system is completely bereft of them. They don't have any bats in the league. They have some promising pitchers, I think, but you know, even our best hitter right now in the minors, Colin Montgomery. I mean, I know he's struggling in Charlotte, which can happen as you advance, but he's hitting 209. He doesn't put the bat on the ball. So I guess from my perspective, what are we looking at? How long is this going to last? And, you know, from my view, I think we're 2028, 2029 before we even start seeing some light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, boy, I can't even picture when this thing turns around because of the offensive issues and the dearth. And it's every level feels like every aspect of that org. And it has for so long. I've been talking about this for so long. I can't imagine what it is to have your heart invested in this team. I mean, the only way that I can really imagine is by looking through the eyes of Chris Tannehill. Seriously. The great Chris Tannehill, our producer during the week on Parkins and Spiegel. I mean, that guy loves baseball, loves the White Sox. And I feel like I have seen the life absolutely drained from him. And I don't think it's just because of our show. I don't think it's only because of that.
I don't think so. I think he has fun with you guys.
And what do you know? What do you know? This is Jack and Wilmat on the Score. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Yeah. Hi. The last caller kind of stole everything I was going to say.
Okay.
I was watching the Major League Baseball channel during the trades.
Yeah.
And two segments came on. Six different people said that the White Sox totally got fleeced by two general managers who were more experienced than the White Sox. So, you know, again, if this is all true and they don't have a minor league system and the owner won't spend any money on ball players, this thing will never stop until he actually sells the team, which I have a feeling will be next year, because I don't think he can go through this again. He has no way to get out of this.
Yeah, I don't know that he has. And the scramble to try and build a new stadium, as much as I like the idea of that stadium in the South Loop on the South Branch of the river over there in the 78, as a way to leave the team and the organization in a good spot before he sells. And I do like that as a concept. I don't think it's got a prayer. It doesn't seem like it's got a prayer. It is brutal. The only way it gets better is if they hire somebody really smart from outside the organization and they let him do everything that he wants. And it's a tale as old as time. I mean, it's how it works in professional sports. Go get somebody smart from another team, another organization that brings in their perspective. But that's not what they do. They didn't even interview anybody other than Chris Getz. Just absolutely horrific. This is Chris in Wakanda, who will squeeze in on the Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I'm a suffering Sox fan.
Mm-hmm.
And all I got, my hopes are, we were at a cookout a few weeks ago, and we had a Cubs fan over there that was like, hey, how's that Sox team doing this year? Came back with a comment, and I said, hey, my team was at least expected to be bad. The Cubs, they were supposed to do something this year, and that kind of shut her up. So that's how we got. And my other thing is a suggestion. They made a movie about the Oakland A's winning 20. Let's make a movie about the White Sox losing 20 now.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So if Moneyball was really, it just culminated with a long win streak, and then they didn't do anything in the postseason in that particular year. God. All right, feel free to name the White Sox movie. Text it to me at 312-644-6767. All right, so that's a Sox fan, angrily lashing out at the Cubs to try and feel better marginally. Mike in Northbrook, are you a Sox fan or a Cubs fan?
Lifelong Sox fan, but a couple of things in perspective here. First of all, the caller who said the Sox don't have a good farm system is wrong. They're in the top one-third of the farm systems, if you take a look, even after the trades. So that's not correct that they don't have a good farm system.
That's based on the pitching. That's based on the arms. There are a lot of good arms down there. He's right about the offense. That's why I didn't correct. There's not a lot of good bats down there. But go ahead.
And number two, I will kind of, in a way, agree with that last caller, because I remember 2 years ago when the Sox had just won the division, and in 22 they were supposed to win it again. And they were just like the Cubs are this year, like 4, 5, 6, below 500, you kept thinking maybe they were going to get it going, and then they had a big series with Cleveland at Sox Park. I was at the game in late August, and they lost, and that was the bust out, and everything's gone. So I think it's worse to go into a season, everybody, including you and everybody, said the Sox were going to lose 100 games, and they are, and more. It's worse for all the hopes to be that you're going to win a division and then be mediocre like the Cubs are this year and like the Sox were 2 years ago.
That is worse. That is worse as an experience in terms of how it leaves you feeling, probably, because it's easier for you to tune out as a Sox fan. I know a lot of Sox fans who just don't even bother. The Cubs fans keep going on this roller coaster of buying in and getting their ass kicked. Right? Once a week. Right. Once a week, you feel like you get your ass kicked. And yesterday was the latest. You'll hear from Dustin Kelly at the top of the hour, the Cubs hitting coach, with some very insightful stuff. A rare chance to talk to him yesterday in the dugout. And we will take a lot more of your calls in the 10 o'clock hour and the 11 o'clock hour. But coming up next, Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Keep it right here on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Bouncing ball over third. Paredes has it. Long throw. And nails it. That one's going to bounce off the netting and toward the tarp. A run is in, and the Cardinals have runners at second and third.
Popped him up. God, that was it, too.
Horner is out and under. Crow Armstrong. Sliding try. Can't get it. Two-run score. A couple of drops in the Cubs outfield today. The Cardinals get a huge break to tie this game four apiece.
An absolute debacle of an inning for the Cubs yesterday. Today they'll try to make it 3 out of 4, but it's going to feel empty no matter what after having that one and losing it. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on a Sunday morning on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. And pleased now to welcome Derek Gould, the very excellent Derek Gould from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Derek, how are you? Thanks for the time.
I'm good. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. So what do you think of these Cubs? You've seen them a bunch. We all thought they were going to be a lot better. Well, as you've watched and done your research before and you're reflecting after, why are they where they are, in your opinion?
Oh, that's a good question. Hey, I mean, it's one that probably applies to every team in the division, right? Like, why doesn't the roster reflect in the standings, or why do the standings reflect something different than the roster? You know, there are teams, Cubs are one of them. I look at the Reds and I'm like, what is going on there? Like, how do the Brewers continue to do it every year, even though they lost so many pieces over the year? But with the Cubs specifically, you know, I think, you know, they were getting such strong pitching performances, right, early on, and the offense was searching. And you look at, like, even what they've done, say, since the beginning of June, you know, yesterday notwithstanding, the bullpen's been pretty good as a group. It's just, what are they working with offensively? What where is the consistency there? And, you know, it's what the Cardinals went through earlier in the season and what they've gone through in a small sample size this weekend is, you know, the lack of offense means a lot of close games. Lack of offense means a mistake, say, on a fly ball in shallow center field comes back to haunt them. That was all happening to the Cardinals, too. And so I think these teams, they aren't exactly the same, but they all in this division kind of rhyme, right? Like, they all have just enough flaws and struggled just enough offensively, with the exception of the Brewers early in the season, which may explain why they're in first place, where those flaws were exposed and they led to losses and they could lead to inconsistent stretches of play and all that stuff. And it's just because they just quite didn't have the offense to carry it. And why that is, that's a great question. I mean, like, you look at the Cardinals lineup, and it shouldn't be struggling. You look at elements of what the Cubs started with, and they really should be better. So, you know, it speaks to both just, like, you know, struggles for individuals. On the Cardinals side, it's Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt not having the seasons expected of two MVP-caliber players. On the Cubs side, it's probably more some of the young players not manifesting or some injuries that they've had. You know, and overall in the league, it's just offenses down and inconsistent. So all those things have kind of played into it. And you're right, when you look at the Cubs, you're like, why aren't they better? But the answer probably is the same for every part of the division. They're just not consistent.
Yeah, that's a really thoughtful answer, and I appreciate you globalizing it, because the margins in this sport are so much more narrow than like every other sport, and it leads to interesting conversation, but also maddening conversation, and you try to get binary with it, and it's never a good idea to disregard the nuance, and here we are. Derek, I thought that the Cubs had passed the Cardinals in terms of organizational health, you know, in the offseason. Yeah. Because I thought last year was a really ugly one for the Cardinals. Then you got to go out and scramble and sign a bunch of old pitchers. And, you know, I thought maybe the system had dried up a little bit. But here's Mason Wynn. And, God, Alec Burleson is, what, 19 home runs? And so where do you think the overall health of the organization is for the Cardinals as compared to, say, where it was for, what, a 20-year run where I thought they were the standard in the National League for a while there?
Yeah, it's not as healthy as it was back then. You know, they've done well. I think there was a Baseball America study, maybe Baseball Reference. I wish I could give proper credit to one. Might have been both, right, using Baseball Reference data and Baseball America looking into it. But regardless, they looked at, like, the impact of homegrown pitchers on teams since the advent of the current kind of draft strategy, right? So you're talking 12 years now with that bonus structure. And the Cardinals had significantly, higher, like, impact based on wins above replacement. I think they were right there. The ones that had positive were the Houston Astros, who get a lot of bulk of that from Bregman, to be honest. So it wasn't just pitching, and then the Dodgers, and then the Cardinals. The Cardinals, the bulk of their thing, they stood out with pitching. But a lot of that was front-loaded, right? Like, that was getting benefit from some of the guys who are no longer around or have been moved out or have struggled. So it hasn't been there for the last few years. The Cubs, Dan Kantrovitz was a part of that, right? Helping to build the Cardinals and select some of those pitchers. But more so, it's the development. And so to your question specifically, they just haven't had that churn, that manufacturing line of development that they counted on several years ago. It's really kind of petered out. And you look at, like, why isn't Dakota Hudson part of this rotation? Why is Jack Flaherty a Dodger and not a lifelong Cardinal, right? Like, you start looking at some of those homegrown pitchers and you go, like, why did they struggle with the Cardinal, or why didn't they manifest their talent? And, you know, there's a lot of conversation in St. Louis about, like, Randy Rosarena and the star he became in Tampa Bay. Less so about Odolis Garcia, because, like the Cardinals did, the Rangers also DFA'd him. That kind of gets lost in the legend a little bit. But Lane Thomas, what have the Cardinals' development, where has that kind of stalled, where these guys have gone on to perform elsewhere? Well, it comes down to opportunity. They didn't really get playing time with the Cardinals. So the bigger question for the Cardinals, and this is specific to comparing the two with the Cubs and the Cardinals, and maybe where you'll see some parallels, is the question for the Cardinals is you kept guys, where's the amplification of them? Burleson has started. Wynn is definitely starting. But Jordan Walker's in AAA. So where is that? You know, Victor Scott is likely on his way here to Chicago. He's a center field dynamo. Is this when he takes off, as the Cardinals need help because of an injury? But where's that amplification? Where's that homegrown guy that they stuck with who is going to go and perform like Randy Rosarena? And that's the question that faces them. And I think somewhat faces the Cubs too, right? Like, who's that young player who takes off and says, yeah, I'm going to be in this lineup for a while and you can count on me.
Derek, last thing, Wilson Contreras on the season, 26 games as a DH, 39 as a catcher. Seen a lot of Pedro Pajes. Is this, is it health related, or like, has he rebounded from the pitcher handling and sort of relationship stuff that marred him last season?
Oh yeah, all that's long gone. All that is blown over, overstated. People who were a part of it had to apologize to Wilson. They put him out. That was just, he deserves so much credit for how he handled last season. One of the things We still have baseball writers dinner every year, and we give out like the St. Louis Baseball Man of the Year. And last year, obviously losing season, terrible season, we probably could have legitimately argued not giving out the award, to be honest. But we gave it to Wilson because of how he handled all of that. His first year with the Cardinals, the taking fly balls in left field one day, he was just a pro and never stopped trying to perform for the Cardinals. And he had every reason to look over his shoulder and go, what are you guys trying to do to me? And he never did. He just kept pressing on. So yeah, that's all gone this year. I mean, he fractured his arm. You might recall, right? Yep. Of course, everybody saw that, right? So coming back from that, he's been eased in. There are two real elements here about why there's that balance of DH and catching. One, first and foremost, is how well Pajes has done handling the pitching staff. The other part is the Cardinals just lack a right-handed bat presence. And so they could put, when they had young Ivan Herrera, who's a catching prospect and a really good hitter for a catcher, when they would have him in the lineup, they would put Wilson as DH because then that was their right-handed hitting component. Same kind of thing with Pajes. So it's a way to not only keep Wilson and his health part of this, but the bigger part is the Cardinals just really need that right-handed thunder because they have such a left-handed oriented bench.
Derek, thanks so much for the time. I mean, if you had to pick a team from everybody that you've watched and you've seen to make a run and be a champ in the small sample that is the postseason, you got one? To me, I love AJ Preller's aggressiveness, and I feel like that bullpen they put together is kind of crazy and fun with all different looks and arm slots and stuff. So I want to say San Diego, but if you had to pick one just for fun, who would you pick right now?
Yeah, I wouldn't discount San Diego too. Their manager out there, Mike Schilt, former Cardinals manager, really deft with a bullpen like that. I mean, the best team I've seen is Philly. Like, the best team I've seen in person, and the best team that, you know, that just has the look about them is Philly in the National League. I think they're probably one excellent titan of a team in the National League. That's Philly. And then there's a lot of teams that could challenge for it. Of course, the Dodgers are in that. We'll see what their health is like. And the Padres are in it. But, you know, I think the Phillies and their roster, their lineup, their familiarity with October, the way they play, the left-handed presence that is potential in that lineup, that's so huge in October. I think they stand out.
Thanks so much, Derek. Appreciate it. Enjoy the day.
Yeah, you bet. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Thanks so much. It's Derek Gold from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The Phillies, by the way, have lost, what, 12 of 16? So, something like that. It's an insane. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row. And then 8 of 9. 10 of 12. And then 13, 14. 13. Yeah. I think it's 13 out of. I don't know. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look it up. I'm going to have it for you when we come back. I'm going to nail it. I'm going to just deliver that number with alacrity.
I can't wait.
And excitement. Be sticking around for that. And Cubs hitting coach Dustin Kelly on some very interesting items. And we will throw open the phone lines back for you this next hour as well. And team of the moment coming up. What else are you going to do on a Sunday morning? Just whatever you're doing, also enjoy hit and run.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.